Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Culture Map presents What's Eric Eating? From the Gal Media Studios in Houston, Texas, here's Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. For our very special 100th episode, I have Charles Clark and Grant Cooper of Clark Cooper Concepts coming up in a little bit. But first, I am joined by my co-host this week. She's a beverage specialist and queen of condiments, Linda Salinas. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm living my best life, Eric.
I'm glad to hear that. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Gabe Medina is back. He's been kind of laying low since he left a key last year, but he's got a new project.
Where else has Gabe Medina worked?
Gabe Medina has worked lots of places, most notably Katarabata, Soma, and Narisawa, a restaurant in Japan that is widely considered to be one of the best in the world.
He's kind of a badass.
He's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And so anything he does is kind of a big deal. He has started a company called Click Robot Run with Steven Salazar, your good friend, my good friend, the operating partner of the Kirby Group. They're the folks behind Wooster's Garden, Holman Draft Hall, Heights Beer Garden, yada, yada. Anyway, so under the Click Robot Run umbrella, they're going to open 5 virtual restaurants, starting with something called A&J Provisions.
Virtual restaurants, yeah. A.K.A. it's delivery, right? Yeah, delivery?
That's right. Delivery and to-go only.
Which I think is awesome. Like,
okay. Let me lay them. All right. Well, let's go. All right. Why do you think it's awesome? Let's start with that. And then we'll kind of go through the four. They've announced 4 of the 5, so we'll just kind of go through them.
Well, first and foremost, I think that to-go delivery, catering, food that's just getting delivered in general is really big business, obviously. Uber Eats, Grubhub, you know, they're monster companies. And they're basically taking a cut on someone else's, you know, on someone else's product, right?
Right. So that's what inspired this, is that maybe not in Houston so much, but in other cities, they've noted Uber Eats, for example, if they see that there's a specific area of town that like doesn't have a poke shop, they might reach out to a sushi restaurant in that area and be like, hey, you can open a virtual poke restaurant out of your kitchen and we'll just deliver, and it'll fill our need because it'll give us a close by poke option and you won't have to do any of the marketing. Like it'll only exist on Uber Eats basically.
Yeah. And then they'll take 30 to 40% of your whatever margin or your cut or whatever.
Yeah. So, however that works.
Yeah. However that works. I mean, I think that works. I think the reason why it works, I think it's going to work very well is that we have a lot of single family, just convenience wise. I think that like that's a really, really great market to start kind of like
well,
to grow
right.
into.
And the kitchen is located basically at Durham in Washington. Mm. So this is like primed, like lots of young professionals, easy access to Washington Avenue, the Heights.
Yeah.
Montrose, you know, all of those are kind of in the River Oaks, obviously. All of that's in the delivery radius. So, you know, from a labor standpoint, right, you can have one set of cooks cooking. You're paying one rent, but you get multiple restaurants out of it.
Yeah, I know.
So, all right. So basically, it's going to be kind of like a food hall in the sense that one kitchen is going to turn out several different styles of food. So the first one is called A&J Provisions. This is like comfort food, you know, meat and three, like Salisbury steak with mac and cheese.
Hmm.
Or all kinds of vegan, vegetarian stuff too. Steven told me that it's basically like the kind of food that they cook for their families at home.
Hmm. All right.
And then the second one is called Bowling Club. Japanese rice bowls inspired by his time at Narisawa.
Okay.
And then there's Sandwich Legend.
Oh, all right.
And then there's 7,000 Islands, which is a Filipino restaurant.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm all about the Samish life. So, all right. We'll see. Hold on, let's see.
So they're rolling out. So A&J Provisions actually opens this week.
Okay, I was like, because I know you like to do the first of everything, and the next thing you know, it's like, opens 2041. You know, like you like to get the real, you know.
No, I like good. To be I like to be first of things, but this. yeah, no. So the first one opens this week, and then. By the end of the year, the other three will roll, like,
oh, cool.
One in August, one in, you all know, right. October, and then one more by the end of the year.
All right, I'll see you, Playboy.
So you're excited about Sandwich Legends?
I'm excited about what Gabe Medina is doing. Like, he doesn't play. Like, he's thoughtful. Like, he does his research, and whatever it is that he decides to do. I think some of the downfalls in his, you know, I guess not even, I wouldn't say even in his career, but like some of the downfalls I've seen is that there's never a support for a front of the house that's really going to support him. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, like, but I will say, like, he has, you know, I think he's probably, you know, he's Filipino. He's worked in various Japanese restaurants, but don't pigeonhole the man.
I mean,
like, he did some consulting for Bosta where he made like a badass pastrami sandwich and like good pastas and like a really great fried chicken special.
But
he has a diverse set of skills.
Yeah, no, but that, I'm not saying that was what I'm saying is that like it always, and it just doesn't always, but the sort of like little hiccups that I've seen, it's pairing with the wrong person that really, really understands how like excellent he is. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, the biggest problem at a key, at least in the beginning, was the service.
Yeah.
And they never quite, you know, it took them a while to find a front of house management team that would complement, that would operate at a level consistent with the food.
Well, and I mean, I just don't think that, I think a lot of these operators that go into these neighborhoods and so on and so forth is that they, you know, it's like, oh, I want to have a restaurant and I want it to feel like this and I want it to look like this and I want the food to look like this and I want, and but you have to consider that, what does that neighborhood really want? Who is your guest? Where is your guest coming from? Who's going to be filling those seats 2 to 3 times a week? You know, like, what does that rent really look like? You right. know?
And so all of, like, he won't have to worry about any of that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's great. You know, stoked. All right.
All right. Topic number 2. Bishop Cidercade. A massive adult arcade and cider dispensary, I guess, for lack of a better, cider bar.
Okay.
Is opening, well, I called it Edo, and then I got a whole bunch of, I literally got Instagram DMs from people complaining about calling that exact location Edo because it should be either East End or the Second Ward. I make fun of these kind of neighborhood, these like little petty neighborhood arguments, but the reason I keep making fun of it is because it keeps happening. So anyway, one or the other.
Well, I mean, just get your shit together and look at a map.
Somewhere east of downtown. 18,000 square feet. 300 arcade games, 40 plus draft ciders. It's a hit in Dallas. They're opening in Houston and in Austin. What do you think? You an arcade? Are you like an old school arcade person?
I mean, I do like arcades, but like, come on, Dallas. Get it together.
So, all right. Well, let me put it to you like this.
Well, let's just talk about it.
That's why we're here.
right? So cider. We have our own cider companies. The Houston Cider Company. We have, don't we have like two or three different cider people?
I think the Houston Cider Company is the only one, but I could very easily be wrong. Obviously, St. Arnold is making a cider.
Cider. Now. I mean, is that really, do you really think that that market is going to, you know, that there's that big of a market?
Well, you're the beverage expert. You tell me. Are you seeing more people drinking cider?
Well, yes, but
right.
Will
people it, like it? It's gluten-free,
it's
right?
It's gluten-free. It has, you know, it metabolizes it a little bit different, you know, different because of the sugars and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right. It's a little sweeter. You don't have to deal with
some
like...
Some of them not, you know.
It's, bitter, right. There can be dry ciders, but you don't have to deal with like... There's not the same snobbery around cider that there is around craft beer.
I mean...
It's a lot more approachable.
It isn't, right? But filling up an entire warehouse of people to come and all only drink cider, let's just see what happens. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's just hold your freaking horses. You know, hopefully we get a, you know, media invite or something, you know, or some sort of, you know.
Oh, no, we'll get some sort of preview, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I just, like, again, I'm always like, I know I sound like a, you know, naysayer or whatever, but like, where are you going to get all these people from? You know, are you going to get all these freaking people from?
I mean, there's a lot of freaking people hanging out at the bars up and down St. Emmanuel, right? Like,
yeah. And there's
kind of, if you build it, they will come, I think.
I mean, I don't know. Let's just see. I think that you're trying to pigeonholing, like, it would be different if it was like cider and, you know, what everyone.
Yeah, no, they don't have beer. They don't do beer and they don't do cocktails. They just do cider.
Okay. Let's just see. Let's see if they pay with them little tokens, you know, if they make all their money back from them.
Oh, no, it's free. You pay a $10 cover free and then the games are free to play.
I don't know.
I think that's my favorite part of it.
All right. Let's see how many times we'll see you there.
I mean.
Exactly.
At least once.
At least once. Here we go.
All right. And then topic number three. Governor Greg Abbott has signed House Bill 1545, which means that Texas breweries will now be able to sell beer to go starting September 1st. Now, it's always seemed a little bit odd to me that Texas wineries and Texas distilleries could sell their products to go, but Texas breweries could not. So this seems like a good thing, right? This seems like such a no-brainer.
Well, I mean, you have to think about who's been fighting against it, you know?
Sure.
Is it places like, you know, Flying Saucer? Is it places like... is it AB? Who's been fighting this bill?
Right. The people who, so for a long time, the people who fought this were the distributors,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they want to maintain their position as the intermediary between producers and retailers.
Of course.
This bill contains some provisions that are sort of a compromise to mollify the distributors. Now, the person who founded the Flying Saucer did denounce this bill in an editorial that I think was published in the Austin American Statesman, but don't hold me to that. His name is Shannon Wynn. You can Google that. But
he did throw a big
temper
tantrum. Yeah, because he's like, you know, we just, you know, want to cry because... I don't know.
They're stealing our business. Essentially,
Dude, you don't make anything. You make nothing. You basically buy shit from somebody else, put girls in, you know...
Plaid skirts,
and you know...
I mean, isn't that every bar, though?
I mean, not all of them, but, you know.
Mm, yeah.
But whatever. You do you, boo. All right? Don't get your butt hurt.
I mean, I will say, the reason I am... the most excited about this is that I think it's going to lead to some really cool events, right? Like, you know, the next time St. Arnold releases a Divine Reserve, they can have a big launch party at the brewery.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to get a bottle there to go home with.
Yeah. Instead of having to wait for specs to take their cut, and the brewer, I mean, St. Arnold's would have to, you know, give to them at, to their wholesale discount, their wholesale pricing. I think it, I think it's good for the brewer, you know. I think it's good for the brewer and for the tie from guest to
right. It it allows it, it in theory at least, it will allow breweries to create beers that might have like a kind of a niche audience.
Yeah.
Knowing that they can distribute them to go from there, you know, so that they can do, you know, crowlers or growlers, yeah, or whatever.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like, there's so much beer in Texas, and there's so much beer in shelves, but there's nothing worse than going somewhere and like, you're at someone's house and you're like, oh man, I got this beer and blah, 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 blah. And then you go to crack open this, you know, Boulevard Saison or whatever, and you take one sip of it and you're like, oh, like that shit's been in the, it's been dying, has been dead for 3 months on the frickin' shelf. It gets sold and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, thanks for making me drink this hot garbage. You know, you spent $17 for that. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, I think that's great for not only the brewery, but for guests, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just, absolutely.
I mean, it's the worst. It's the absolute worst. Anyways.
All right. That does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
So, Linda, for our restaurants of the week, I want to start with something that you've been deeply involved with as a consultant, which is the new Ninfa's in Uptown. You've created some new cocktails for them. You're kind of giving them a happy hour program. So let me just ask you, how's it going? Because, you know, Mary Clarkson was on the show a couple weeks ago. She and I had a mixed experience at Ninfa's Uptown. And so,
well, first off, let's just get it clear and straight. Like, you can't come in the week, not even the week that we're open, and then just like nail us to the cross. I'm sorry that everything just wasn't absolutely divine. You know, I wished she would have said something to someone, not on the air, but you know, whatever, to each his own, right? That's, everyone has their soapbox.
That's right.
And it's always good. It's always good to hear when there's problems. Like there is nothing wrong with that. I think that if we ever decided as professionals to shut our ears down or, you know, or whatever, to not good, you know,
A little criticism,
then we don't know what we're doing anymore. Right. But, regardless of all that commentary, we have been very busy. That neighborhood loves Ninfa's. We've been super packed. Every day has been like outstanding as far as like seeing so many guests. Everyone's been pretty happy. We are doing a really great happy hour. The patio is starting to kind of fill in its own way. And I mean, the kitchen's just, you know, just cranking. I mean, I think in the next couple of weeks, Jason's going to be rolling out his own specials, just like at Navigation. I love Navigation. Obviously, it's an iconic restaurant. And I do love all the normal like Tex-Mex fare. But I think that one of the reasons why it's so awesome at Navigation is that it has its own like really cool set of Alex Padilla, you know, specials, from lamb shanks to birria.
I walked into the Ninfa's on Navigation once and had lamb barbacoa that was like mind-blowingly good.
That's what I love about Navigation.
And that's so, what separates Ninfa's from other Tex-Mex restaurants that are basically run by kitchen managers. Yep. Is like they those other restaurants might be very consistent when it comes to fajitas and enchiladas,
yeah,
but they won't be as creative,
yeah,
in their use of ingredients or seasonal items or anything. So
yeah,
so yeah, bringing some of that to the new Neenfizz obviously is all to the good.
Yeah.
And Jason is eminently well qualified, having worked at Cyclone Anais for a long time and Gravitas before that.
Yeah, no, I mean he's an excellent chef, and I think that he's going to be, you know, getting a minute to flex like what he can actually do. And actually, Alex and Jason put together these really awesome happy hour bites. You know, like we have a lengua empanada with this. It's like got this really like lovely texture to it, not only on the inside but on the outside. And
do I need to tell people that lengua is beef tongue, or we think people listening to the show know that?
I think that we're in Houston and a lot of people know what lengua is.
Just making sure.
Yeah, I think we're good. But there's like taquitos, and then we have a crispy fish skin taco and a couple of other things. Like those are all small bites to kind of like get you a little taste of what's coming. But those are happy hour bites. Happy hour is doing really well. I mean, the concept is just going to still continue to develop.
So let me just to be clear, you didn't fuck with the Neenfarita, did you?
No, dude. No. No. No, I did not. Okay? I know better.
But you've added to the agave selection, and you brought in some mezcal. Yeah, and
some mezcal and, you know, a couple of other tricks that I like to do, you know. But
yeah, what was that watermelon and cachaça cocktail?
I did a cachaça, lime, watermelon, agua fresca cocktail, a little bit of salt up top. I'm a salt monster.
That was very tasty.
Yep. And then I also did a Negroni. And Negroni week is actually this week.
Yes.
And so it's a week that starts, and basically $1 from each cocktail goes to your favorite charity. And so it's just a different way to kind of like, you know, to give back to the community, any community that you want to.
The restaurant chooses the charity.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So, but I did a Negroni, and then I'm still going to develop a couple of other things. You know, it would be silly as a beverage consultant or anyone to just walk into a new, like an already outstanding, like.
Yeah, people have strong opinions about the need for
it. Yes, absolutely. And so it'd be silly for me to just walk in and be like, I just think it's better for us to flip everything. So just like you can't mess with queso. Can't mess with the queso.
All right, so just to sum up, it's going well. You're making progress.
Yes.
I saw Dave Mays, the operations director for Legacy, last week at an event, and he basically told me the same thing, which is that it's been a little bit of a struggle to kind of get their hands around this monster because the restaurant's big, and getting the crew up to speed has been challenging, but that they're getting there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like with anything else. I mean, any restaurant opens up and it's like trying to figure out all the cogs and pieces are where they work, you know? And so that's kind of where we've been, but, the neighborhood's really good. So
yeah, I'm ready to go back. I'm ready for another round of fajitas.
All right. Why don't you try the other stuff? You know,
cause I like the fajitas.
Ay Dios. Fine.
I've been eating the fajitas since I was like 4 or 5. It's too late to change. I'm committed.
All right, fine.
All right. And then the other restaurant I want to talk about this week is Lottie Dottie, which is not really a restaurant. It's a patio bar. It's the new project from Adam Doris and Michael Riojas. We know Adam from Pax Americana and Presidio. We know Michael from Beavers and Good Company and Ladybirds. And I have to say, I respect the kind of wave of patio bars that have like gimmicks, right? Like wallpaper in the bathrooms where you can take a selfie because it's cool, or like a giant Ferris wheel in the backyard. Like I respect that. I get what people like about that. But what I liked about Lottie Dottie is that it didn't have any of that. It's like, it's just a bar. It's just a bar with a lot of seating and a whole bunch of frozen drinks.
Eight frozen drinks.
Like another 8 draft cocktails and then some house cocktails.
Their wine selection is very good.
Yeah, and very affordable.
Very affordable, yeah. No, it's a great neighborhood. It's a great neighborhood bar. Beer selection is good. The spirits aren't too crazy. I mean, one of the things that kind of drives me a little bonkers is when I walk in and I'm like, oh, I know everything that's in the back bar. That's not a good thing. Like, because not everyone knows all of those spirits, you know?
Yeah, you don't necessarily want them to be super obscure.
No, 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 no. It's really, it's very well edited, you know, selection. I am worried about their parking, you know?
Yeah, they don't really have any, at least that I'm aware of. They've had, the couple times I've been there, they've had valet.
Yeah.
Which is convenient. But I don't know. I mean, they must have leased some parking somewhere nearby, but yeah. I don't know where it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but in all honesty, like at this point, I would much rather have people just know to just Uber, just Lyft.
Right.
You know,
like right. Don't drive to the bar.
Don't drive to the bar. Just
because then you have to drive home from the bar.
Yes, exactly.
Then you get pulled over and then it's expensive.
Ugh. And it's just a nightmare.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we are Houstonians and Houstonians love driving places no matter how many times you tell them to not drive. But as far as the aesthetics of the bar, I mean, it looks a lot different than...
Yeah, it used to be Brooklyn Athletic Club and it doesn't look anything like
that. Anything like that. But it's... I think it's going to be a good welcoming...
Yeah, I thought the service was good, right? I mean, you know, we, like when we went and sat down, you know, someone came over and brought us water.
Yes, water service.
You know, all those little things. And then the food menu, you know, I had the grilled cheese, which I really liked. The charcuterie looks compelling. There's an $8 cheeseburger that seems pretty reasonable. You know, the chicken wings, I think, from the Presidio days are on this menu.
All right.
So, you know, again, like I don't have to have food at the bar, but it's nice when there's a little bit of food because you can kind of,
yeah,
it makes it more approachable, like for happy hour.
So, questions that I didn't ask, but are they doing happy hour?
I don't know. They should.
All right, and then other question: how late's that kitchen open?
So, suppose for now, right as I understand it, the kitchen is open the entire time they are open, which is 3 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Oh wow!
I don't know. A lot of times places open with those kind of good intentions and yeah. then it doesn't last. So fingers crossed.
All right.
Well, but if I could even get that food until midnight, I'd feel pretty good about it.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Linda, thank you very much.
See you soon.
I'll be right back with Grant Cooper and Charles Clark.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
So as I said, this is the 100th episode of What's Eric Eating. So my guests this week are the major players, two of the heavy hitters in the Houston restaurant world, Charles Clark and Grant Cooper of Clark Cooper Concepts. They are the owners of Ibiza, Brasserie 19, Copa, Punk's Simple Southern Food, and the Dunleavy. I'm going to introduce you separately so people can hear your voices. Grant, welcome to the show. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for having us on your 100th episode.
Charles, thanks for being here. Good to see you.
It's a pleasure. First time to do this. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. So I like to start these interviews kind of at the beginning. Can you tell me, how did you guys meet and start working together?
You want to do that or you want me to start?
How did we meet?
Well,
I think we were sleeping with the same girl, maybe.
I remember we lived in Dallas, and I was restoring an old 64 T-Bird, and I was riding a bike everywhere, and I went to this ice house, have a few beers, and Grant was there, and, you know, kind of guy wears jerseys and shorts and tennis shoes 24/7. It's a little ice house right in the middle of Highland Park, which is like River Oaks, and I had a tan. I just got back from backpacking through Europe, and he had just got back a few months earlier, and we said, where did you backpack? I said, Greece. I said, so did I. I said, what? Island. He goes, Corfu. I go, so did I. Turns out we were in a Corfu at the same hotel together. We missed each other just by a few months, and we had that in common. So he grew up in Belgium, I found out later, and we both liked food. And, you know, at a young age, most guys are into, you know, fried foods and stuff. This guy was into, you know, braised rabbit and snails and foie gras and all that. And he was one of the only guys I could talk to, so we became really good friends. And this, and he stayed in the bar business for a while, and I stayed as a waiter for a while. Later on in our life, that's when we started the Clark Cooper Concepts.
Yeah, I mean, you guys had a restaurant downtown, right? But that...
We did.
But that wasn't part of Clark Cooper. That was kind of pre-Clark Cooper.
That was our first restaurant together.
That's when you do everything on a handshake and you trust everybody, and then a year later you find out you're really not the owner, and you have a meeting. You say, you know, screw this, I'm out of here, and we developed our own company, and that's where we started Ibiza. A year later, a year to the day, pretty much.
Yeah, you opened Ibiza what in 2001. So you're rapidly approaching 20 years.
I know,
20 years. Quick. Yep. Next year.
So, I mean, obviously Ibiza is still popular, still successful, like at a time when, you know, so many restaurants maybe have a 4 or 5 year run. What is it about Ibiza that's allowed it to have such longevity?
I think consistency is the key.
I'm there every day. I know every customer. I'm very consistent with it. We're kind of the end of an era, I think, when it comes to service. When I mean service, I mean years ago, Grant spilled a glass of wine on a customer, or he didn't spill it. The customer spilled it, and Grant looked at the label, found out where it came from, ran as fast as he could in his car, bought a $400 jacket and gave it to the guy. The guy walked out with a brand new jacket with no wine spills and went to the theater. Just service like that. We started doing – we had T-shirts printed. They said the rules have changed. Everybody said, what does that mean? I go, well, the rules have changed. No more – buying a $10 bottle of wine and charging a $100 bottle of wine for it. And we changed everything about it. Customer service, you know, to our standards, we would go out of our way to make people happy. And I think it stuck with Ibiza, and that's why, you know, it's still around today.
Yeah. I think it kind of started with the attitude towards our whole wine philosophy over there. It was kind of our approach about being close to a fine dining restaurant, but really without the pretentiousness, kind of scale it back and take the attitude more of the farmers and stuff in the wine country and not make it seem so unapproachable. And I think we kind of did that through our attitude a little bit and our kind of just playing the music in there and had a lot of energy when you walked in and those type of things. And I think, you know, doing that almost 20 years ago was something new to the Houston restaurant scene.
Yeah, I mean, and the wine pricing, which is basically just a little bit over retail, it's kind of revolutionized dining in Houston because, you know, it just, you know, why would I order a bottle of wine for $200 at some restaurant when I know that I can go to one of your places and get it for $80?
You know? Yeah. You can't afford not to drink at one of our restaurants.
That's right. Oh yeah, no. You get and two bottles, right?
Two bottles, yeah. Exactly.
It's cheap enough to get that.
Two bottles on an Uber.
Yeah, we always said, well, we'd rather have people drink two bottles at $44 a bottle as opposed to one at, you know, $65 or something like that. So it's kind of a win-win situation for everyone.
Was there a specific, like, program somewhere else that inspired that, or was it just you guys kind of being practical about?
Actually, I think it started back when we first met back in Dallas. We were talking about, you know, back then we had no money and you wanted to go somewhere to have a good meal and good wine. We always find the places where you could bring your own wine type of
Cafe
thing.
Cafe Madrid, remember?
Cafe Madrid was right down the street from the bar where I worked. So I think it was that attitude about why do people have to mark up the wine so high when we all know what the cost of the wine is. And so I think, you know, initially we were going to have it, you know, BYOB, kind of bring your own wine. But then we said, well, we want to inventory. We want to bring in the wine that we think is going to be best with the menu. So we said, well, if we are going to do this, let's do a slight markup over retail. And I think, you know, at that time, and even to this day, it's a scary thing for a restaurant person to kind of put into place because, you know, you're thinking the margins just aren't going to work. So you're not really micromanaging just that one segment. You're looking at the bigger picture as far as how you run the business.
So from Ibiza, then you opened Catalan with Chris Shepherd, and there was a moment in time where I think that was kind of considered the best restaurant in Houston.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Chris and I graduated from culinary school together, and he was at Brennan's, and I had I'd had a lot of success at a visa, being out in the open, talking to customers, and I knew Chris had that kind of same attitude, and I know he could cook. I knew he was passionate about whatever he did. So he was selling wine. I remember he had a jacket that said the wine guy. He was selling wine at Brennan's. I said, dude, get out of here. Come do a deal with us. And I pulled Grant, and I had an idea, pulled Antonio Giannola from DeMarco at the same time. So I think one of the critics called us the Dream Team. And then we had
Matt also on board, Matt, as one of the guys. He was over at Mark's at the time.
Yeah, and Becky Masson worked there too, right? She did some pastry stuff.
Yeah,
she did.
Becky worked for us. At Ibiza as well, off and on a couple of times.
Yeah.
So I mean, you guys have had like an incredible roster of chefs that have worked for you over the years. Not just Chris, but obviously Brandy Key, and I mean EJ Miller, who's now at International Smoke, and now you've got
Travis, who is Field and Tides over there.
Right.
Yeah, he was there for a while,
and then.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. A lot of people in the industry overall, just from chefs all the way down to
You've got
servers and managers.
Right, you could basically walk into any restaurant in Houston and be like, hey, didn't I fire you like 5 years ago?
Well, I've had people come in and looking for a job, and I have to question myself. I think I fired this guy for something, 4 or 5 years ago. I can't remember. But
it works both ways, because I'll go into a brand new restaurant, and I might not know the owner, but I'll know one busboy or one waiter. So it's like, hey, that's Charles. He didn't have, get him a good table, whatever. Right. I might get an extra side of French fries or something. Who knows?
But when you're kind of evaluating people, or when you're bringing people on, like, what are the qualities you're looking for? Because you seem to have a really good track record identifying talent.
Well, one thing in the front of the house, we look at, when I look at the people, I'll just look at the people. We ask, and one of the things I just ask them right off the bat is if they cooked anything last night, where did they eat? Not so much of the standard questions. I ask them to tell me a good joke. I want to know if they are the people, people person, or if they're just looking for a job to satisfy their paycheck to kind of pay the rent. So we're looking for people that are more passion driven about food in general. Do they actually care about food? And I think the more of those type of people we get on board, the better the overall team is, as far as front of house and back of the house. So we don't want people cooking food if it's not really their passion. So the key is kind of getting to know the person through an interview, as opposed to just the standard questions of where they worked and what they did. I like to kind of get their personality.
Remember in 2001, one of the first questions Grant would ask a waiter walking in, Grant goes, "What's foie gras?" And if they didn't know, that was the end of the interview. So if they knew what foie gras was, the interview would continue.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And then, Charles, what about you? I mean, you've kind of had this role of mentoring chefs and training chefs. I mean, what are the qualities you're kind of looking for?
Kind of the same. I try to tell people, look, the money will come if you follow your passion. I know that sounds corny. A lot of people say that. But I just want to get people excited about the food. If they come in and the guy shows up early or wants to come in on his day off and cook, that's a big plus for me. A team player, somebody like Grant, I always use a sports analogy. We want to win every game, so we put the best team on the floor. And that's in the kitchen, in the front of the house. And it's hard to come by those guys, because especially today is a employee's market. And, everybody, here's 25 cents extra, and they leave you rather than staying, doing a good job, and then – look at, Sean Marine owns his own restaurant now. He was with us 15 years, and the guy busted his butt, and he owns his own restaurant. And a lot of people have left Clark Cooper Concepts and went on to be very successful and looked back and said, hey, Grant or Charles, you were hard on me, but, man, it worked out my life,
So, yeah, let me just shift gears slightly. I mean, as I said, you guys have been in the business here in Houston for about 20 years. I mean, how would you say kind of the scene has changed overall in terms of maybe like what diners are looking for, or maybe there's things you thought wouldn't have been viable in 2001, but maybe you think they're viable now?
Well, I think there's a lot more options right now. I think every little neighborhood has a couple of restaurants they can go to. And I think for the most people kind of eat within their 1 mile radius of their house, or once they get home, or so they have their kind of their habitual patterns. So I think people definitely have options. But as far as the scene, I think everyone's a food critic now, it seems like. I mean, it used to be people would come in and kind of sit down, dine, and appreciate what you're doing. I feel like there's a lot of people that want to tell you how to do things almost to a certain degree, and they kind of tell our servers or they tell our staff, and then the staff tells us about different things. So in a way, I guess that keeps us on edge and makes us maybe a little stronger, a little better. But
all the social media, man, just the apps. I mean, people, they'll order a bottle of wine from France or something no one's ever heard of, and they'll put an app on it and say, oh, it's they only made certain sort of cases, and you know, it's actually $12 a bottle, and you're charging $26 a bottle. You know, just the social media aspect is changed.
Yeah, and you've been kind of busy on Cleverly's Facebook group, kind of mixing it up a little bit.
I get her. What are you talking about? I just don't understand when people go on Facebook and they ask for a recommendation. Who else knows a restaurant more than the owner? Who knows can give them answers? Who can be there, welcome them, and make sure they have a perfect? But as an owner, you can't say a word. It has to come from other customers. Is that what you're talking about? Something like
well,
that?
No. I just like someone will be like, "Where's the best gazpacho in town?" And you'll be like, "Oh, that's easy."
Yeah, I don't answer. Yeah. I don't get. I go, that's easy because I'm one of the few. I actually lived in Marbella. I lived in Spain for a couple of years. I traveled all over Spain, so I make gazpacho in my sleep. I know what it's the way they eat it over there. They drink it like out of a milk carton, and then you see all these chefs. They're coming up with this chunky watermelon gazpacho, and I'm like, man, where did you learn to make gazpacho? They would laugh at you in Spain. But I like to do traditional gazpacho. That's anything I cook, like say paella. I like to make it traditional to honor where it comes from.
Sure. One of the other things I kind of wanted to talk to you guys about is you guys have been business partners for a really long time. Any number of restaurant partnerships have come and gone in the amount of time you guys have been doing this. Like, so what is the secret to sustaining a successful business relationship? Because it just seems like there's all these restaurant groups that kind of spring up out of nowhere and then they're gone in a year or two.
I think we both have the same vision of as far as what kind of restaurants we want to do. So I think that, you know, that's kind of the base right there. I think we've been friends for 25 years, 30 years or so. So, you know, I think it kind of just starts. We have a lot of history between each other, you know. We could probably tell each other's story for the last 30 years and, you know, good ones, bad ones, different ones. So, you know, kind of growing up together, I think, you know, makes a big difference.
Yeah, we never really been in many arguments. I mean, if we argue, it's about getting the customer, like, I think they should have this wine or this customer or whatever. I mean, we play good cop, bad cop. I've had to kick people out of the restaurant a lot. And then Grant has done it a couple times. But we really don't fight. It's strange. We respect each other's opinions. And, you know, I don't know. We've just been very fortunate. But I've seen so many partnerships. I mean, you name it. I can't think of one partnership that is still intact over 20 years in this city. You know, it's hard.
Yeah. So let me turn to Brasserie 19. Certainly, I would say maybe your best known concept, maybe your most successful concept. How's it going over there? Because you've got all that construction now with the high-rise going up next door.
Actually, the business is good. You know, I think when they first started with the construction, I think they plastered all over the newspapers. Every time they said they were putting up a high-rise, they were tearing down this or that on West Gray, they had a picture of Brasserie 19. So I think everyone saw the picture, saw the title, but didn't read the article and thought that the Brasserie was going to be torn down. So I think for about 6 months or so there, we had people, you know, asking us, where are we going? What's going to happen? And this and that. And we were like, we're not going anywhere. I walked into one time at Brasserie and these group of ladies said, well, I heard you guys are, you know, you're moving over here. And I said, no. And she goes, no, I'm telling you are. I'm telling you we're not, you know. Literally, I had an argument with these ladies about it and they were emphatic. And I said, I think I would know. And so I think it was that part of it. But now that, you know, I don't even know if people realize there's a high rise being built. You know, I think you drive up and down these streets in Houston and you're like, wait a minute, where did that high rise come from all of a sudden? So,
yeah, I mean, I think
it's minimal now at most. So,
yeah, I mean, I think the developer is kind of counting on Brasserie to be an amenity for their tenants, right? I mean, that's part of the appeal.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and I'm not going to speak for Weingarten, but I know they wanted us to stay there for, you know, there was no, you know, no doubt about it that it certainly helps having Brasserie 19 there.
So what is it about that restaurant that's just made it so successful? I mean, it just seems like it's like a constant party in there.
I think we just hit lightning in a bottle. I mean, it was the quickest lease we ever signed. Tony Mendota left that restaurant after 20 years, and they said, hey, would you guys like to do a concept here? And Grant and I just, man, we're gonna do something quick. I don't even think we knew what we wanted to do. I think we signed the lease before we knew. And then we said a brasserie.
We said brasserie right away.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we didn't have it all lined up. But when we signed the lease, man, we just hit the ground running. We knew it was a dynamite location. River Oaks is basically one red light away. And,
We knew at the time there was – so when we think about concepts, for example, when we did Copa originally, there weren't a lot of chef-driven Italian restaurants. And there was no brasserie in the city of Houston for the most part at the time. And coming from Europe, I was like, this is unacceptable, really. And, it's almost embarrassing at the time that, you would to think that there wasn't something like that. And when this popped up and they said, hey, you want to be in this – and we're like, wait a minute, you mean right here by River Oaks, great neighborhood – for sure, this is perfect for a brasserie, and that's why we named it 19, because we wanted to be part of the neighborhood. And a brasserie, that's exactly what it should be. It should be the melting pot of the surrounding neighborhood. That's where people come and gossip. That's where people kind of go and get their news back in the day. And I think, we've been able to kind of bring that brasserie spirit to that exact location. And I think that location itself, being in River Oaks, doesn't hurt. For the for the people coming in, and then there's other people, but I wouldn't say it's just a party scene. I think brasserie or any restaurant should be in Houston. So the way we kind of design them is that you want energy, because there's nothing else to do in Houston for the most part. To go out to dine is one of the most one of the biggest things as far as an experience on the day to day basis during the week. So I think providing an environment where people go in and feel like they've gone to a great movie for 2.5 hours, has to have great food service, good wine prices. I think that's what we try to do. So if people want to have a good time, that's what we want. We want them to leave and feel better than when they walked in.
I think that all makes sense. There is just something, it's so lively. Like even, Shannon and I had lunch there, your publicist Shannon and I had lunch there a couple of months ago, and it's like Friday afternoon at 1:30, and like as soon as you walk in, there's like the big eight top, and it's like eight dudes just with like three bottles of champagne on the table, big plate of oysters. It's like they're there to have a good time.
Well, that started at Ibiza too. I mean, you walk into Ibiza, a lot of people say it's like a good old boys club at lunchtime, and I think that's because you can get the prices of wine, but I also think it's just the attitude that we try to instill with our management and our staff is to provide that good service, but again, not being too pretentious, have some good music playing, have good food, and don't think too highly of yourself every day, and that every day is a brand new day. And we're like, we say we kind of look at it as a sporting event. Every day is a new game, but we try to kind of clean the slate and start all over the next day and provide like for the best show that we can.
And then just tell me a little bit about how it's going in Rice Village with Copa Osteria and Punks.
Copa is booming. It's actually our busiest restaurant as far as just the amount of customers coming through the doors. I think, again, when we looked at that location for an Italian restaurant, we liked the idea. In fact, the landlord was trying to push us to a different spot within that building. And we said, no, I want to take the corner spot because it felt more like part of the neighborhood and it felt more like an outdoor patio. You want to be kind of feel like you are on the side of the streets somewhere in Italy, even though we were in Rice Village. So, and I think all that has come true. And I think every year Copa has increased its sales. And right now we're up 10% from last year. And last year was our best year. So we're continually to grow and grow. And I think our food program over there has just blossomed. We're doing unbelievable different types of pastas, all made in house in our dough room. So I think we're always pushing the envelope there. I think I think it's our most thriving restaurant right now between the group of restaurants we have.
It's the one that's always seemed to me like you could open more of them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Italian, yeah, for sure. You can, there's a lot of different ways you can go. You can step it up. You can step it down. You can go with exactly what we have. So there's a lot of variations with that concept that could be done for sure.
And then how's Punks doing?
Punks is good. It's, you know, it's our kind of our what do you want to call it? It's Punks. You know,
it's your most family friendly content.
It's my, yeah. It's my nickname, Punk. Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely friendly, family friendly, which is good. But it's also kind of it honestly makes it really tough on the staff because kids are running and you know they enjoy the backyard type of atmosphere. Courtyard. But it's hard when you're trying to take an order and half the table's not at the table and things like that. So it kind of presents its own little dilemma. It's you know, it's good for the guest because they have a reprieve and they can kind of hang out, but you know, again, we've made it work for ourselves.
And then the Dunleavy, I mean, maybe from a design standpoint, your prettiest build out. I mean, 40 chandeliers hanging from the ceiling, right? As I recall,
43, yeah.
40, yeah, quite a bit of chandeliers.
Plus the two in the restroom.
Plus we didn't know they need wiring a few days before opening. We tried to turn them on, and it was all European wiring, so yeah. We had to rewire everyone.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so that was a little painful.
You just announced you're going to start doing dinner there next year. Why did you decide to make that change away from events and towards regular dinner service?
I think we kind of made a statement about it, but essentially, listening over the last 3 years to the amount of people that wanted to kind of experience the Dunleavy, either at lunch or dinner especially, they weren't able to at dinner. So unless you were there at a private event, and all the people that would go there for private events would tell people. But again, if you didn't have a ticket, so to speak, to go to a private event, then you aren't, in the space. And the space is beautiful. The location is very unique. It's one-of-a-kind location. I don't think there'll be another location in Houston ever, for the most part. There's only one Buffalo Bayou, and there's only one space for a restaurant like that. So I think listening over the last 3 years to the guest demand to be able to experience it more allowed us to make the decision a little easier. We, do breakfast, lunch, and then we transition every you know, 3 or 4 times a week. We have to transition from breakfast, lunch to a private event. We have to take all the furniture out, bring new furniture in. We're prepping during breakfast and lunch for a private event. So there's a lot of logistics that makes it extremely, I don't want to say difficult. It is difficult, but the staff has, over the years, been amazing as far as being able to handle that kind of level of stress. But I think we can take a lot of that stress. We can kind of streamline our process in the kitchen and be able to provide more of a continuous restaurant feel by doing breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
So
and Allen Parkway is developing along there. There's a lot of new stuff coming in that area, so we're trying to be ahead of the game as well.
What do you think the food is going to be like at dinner? Because I mean, one of the things about the Dunleavy is it doesn't have as clearly a defined cuisine as a brasserie or an osteria.
I think the best way, you know, Charles and I and our team over there with Jane and everybody will be developing the menu over the next 5 to 6 months as we transition into the dinner. But essentially, it's more of a California spirit as far as the style of cuisine. I think that's kind of the way we view it. A lot of local ingredients, utilizing the more farm-to-table type of atmosphere or experience, dining experience, but local fresh ingredients. We'll have some surprises for you as far as a little bit of the decor. Not that we're changing it dramatically. The chandeliers will always be there. But the style of, the plateware, different things. Yeah. We want to have a little more fun with this. I think we can because of the setting itself. It kind of lends to more theatrics.
And then, you know, you've told me over the years several times that you have 4 to 5 concepts at 75%, and you can you can go to 100, you know, in a couple of months sometimes if you had to.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of irons in the fire? I mean, do you think you'll open a new restaurant sometime soon?
Yes,
definitely.
Like you signed a lease, definitely, or like
I would say 99.9%.
The ink's drying. Put it like that.
All right.
Yeah, we should open. Well, Dunleavy. I guess you can call that a new restaurant in a sense. So that's one. And then we have 2 other things we're working on that should open next year.
Oh,
yeah.
Inside the loop or outside the loop?
You're talking about the 610 loop here, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about the 610 loop.
I would say
that is
inside
the loop, sir.
Inside.
Oh.
In your hunting grounds.
Yeah.
Perfect. You don't want to
play hot cold?
Yeah, we
we would like to say it's just the leases and stuff. They forbid you to say anything.
We're at 75% and beyond now on two of them.
But okay.
Until we're ready to kind of talk about it,
Well, you know, I have to ask.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, gentlemen, that brings me to the end of my questions, unless you have some other topic that you want to dive into.
That was painless.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm
getting out while I'm ahead.
I always end these interviews with something I call the lightning round. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Grant, I'm going to start with you. What is your favorite cookbook?
Right now, I would say the Bestia cookbook out of L.A.
Charles, how about you?
Jelena. He just turned me on to it. I like it.
Grant, what is the first band you ever saw in concert?
Rush.
Nice.
In Belgium, Brussels.
Charles, how about you?
Kiss.
Grant, what is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
With a drive-thru? P. Terry's, burgers.
Austin Classic, all right.
Chick-fil-A.
All right.
Calls my kids.
Charles, who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Oh, Dan Pastorini.
Grant, how about you?
Mickey Mantle.
And then finally, Grant, when you go to a pizza place for the first time, what is your go-to pizza order?
The go-to is the margarita.
Charles?
Just a plain cheese pizza with anchovies. Simple. I like salt.
All right, give us the website for Clark Cooper and social media and all that stuff.
ClarkCooperConcepts.com. And what was the other? Let me get Shannon over here.
Shannon, get over here.
Get over here, Shannon.
That's what we pay you for.
ClarkCooperConcepts.com and at Clark Cooper Concepts on Instagram.
And that'll take you to all of the other restaurants and everything else.
Correct.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
You can follow me on Twitter at esandler, on Instagram at ericsandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.